What are the potential economic consequences of the unrest in Egypt?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in New York. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Morning Open, a look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. In a moment, we'll ask about the global economic implications of the situation in Egypt. But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are mixed right now. The Dow is basically flat at 11,823. The Nasdaq down about 0.1%. The S&P 500 up about 0.1%. Exxon said this morning that higher oil prices helped it rake in $30 billion last year. That's up from $19 billion the year before. Also, the government reported today that consumer spending rose by 0.7% in December. That's the fastest pace in 3 years. Now let's get to the big story, the protests in Egypt and what it all means for the global economy. Sam Stovall is chief investment strategist with Standard & Poor's Equity Research. He's with us now live. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So first of all, explain why what's going on in Egypt matters so much to global markets.
Well, I think that investors are using the tensions as a catalyst to digest the 24% advance in share prices that we have seen since August. And what they're also trying to do is to ascertain what kind of an effect this will have, because by itself, Egypt, Tunisia, and Yemen represent less than 0.5% of global GDP,
right.
And the entire 21-nation region represents about 3.5%. So by itself, it's not the big issue.
So it's really a question of whether this is going to spread to other countries in the region.
Exactly. If we find that the Suez Canal gets shut down, if we find that this political tension spreads to oil-producing countries and thereby disrupting output, well, then we could see higher gasoline prices here that could then result in lower consumer confidence and a threat to our economy.
And Sam, quickly, do you think that this situation has the capacity to really cause a slowdown in global markets the way, say, the European debt crisis did?
Not yet. Our belief is that it probably will end up being curtailed or contained in the Middle East, North Africa region, and that as a result, it's something that will end up being a blip for all of 2011. But I think because things are so uncertain, because geopolitical issues can get out of control like wildfires, that Wall Street is certainly paying very close attention.
Sam Stovall, chief economist at Standard & Poor's Equity Research, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Well, the World Economic Forum is wrapping up in Davos, Switzerland. The event promises every year to improve the state of the world. But some critics say this year's get-together didn't help the global economy at all. Here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
It's not a G20 world, it's a G0 world. That phrase from U.S. economist Nouriel Roubini may be the forum's takeaway message. He said there's a lack of leadership among the big nations. All in all, says Sean Rickard of the Cranfield School of Management, the Davos delegates did not provide a clear roadmap for the year ahead. But then he claims they failed to do that before the meltdown.
Did they foresee these crises coming? Did they warn about them? No, they didn't really. It's the place to be seen. Whether it actually contributes anything of any real value is, I think, a matter of debate.
He says the real business in Davos is done quietly behind the scenes between company bosses putting out feelers and striking multi-million dollar deals. The details may not emerge for months or even years. I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions that can help to guarantee income for life. AllianzUSA.com. By Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. And by Reputation.com, helping businesses and professionals monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations. Reputation Defender is now Reputation.com.
It's pretty typical for businesses to make decisions based on what customers want. But for decades, the fashion industry has bucked that trend. Instead of the market driving fashion, fashion has driven the market. Now, as Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports, that's starting to change.
There are moments, flipping through dresses on racks at a store, when I see something truly terrible, like a really ugly barf brown dress, and wonder what in the world the designer was thinking. But soon, those fashion whiffs could become much less frequent as data mining comes to haute and not-so-haute couture.
The fashion industry in particular has been fairly closed for a while, I think. It's always been a little bit top-down.
Jess Lee is the co-founder of the fashion site Polyvore, which allows you to make collages of your favorite clothes. Think magazine fashion spreads, matching high and low-end fashion from all over the web. And when you choose to include that Prada blouse in your collage, maybe with that skirt from H&M, Polyvore keeps track.
A new Polyvore set is created every 3 seconds. So we're just sitting on a very large gold mine of data about products, what products people want, what brands are being used, what trends are on the rise.
All that data allows designers and buyers to see how potential customers interact and don't with their different styles. Designers can track performance of their brand on Polyvore's analytics site. They can also see what trends are doing well for other companies. And they partner with the site to run contests, encouraging people to style with their newest lines. And all the new data that's out there is really changing what fashion is. Marshall Cohen is a retail analyst with the NPD Group.
Fashion, which was always known as a very risk-taking and very avant-garde and forward business, has been pressured over the last decade to find new ways to be able to be just as profitable as any other area in retail.
Information generated by sites like Polyvore and other online fashion communities can help reduce risk, which means that in the future, that frumpy brown dress may not wind up on the 90% off rack or even getting made in the first place. But it also may become harder to find something really unique. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
And finally, Chinese state television broadcast a video last week showing off a new fighter jet, but to a lot of people, the footage of the J-10 fighter looked pretty familiar. In fact, the shots of a missile destroying another jet in midair looked exactly like an explosion from the 1986 movie Top Gun. China Central Television hasn't admitted any wrongdoing, but the footage has been removed from the channel's website. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
Best guesses are that maybe 20% of Bolivians live in other countries, gone there to look for work. But ever since the financial crisis, those opportunities abroad have dried up.
Spain has deflated like a balloon. Employment has disappeared and many Latinos have been laid off and returned home.
I'm Kai Rizdal, trying to go home again. That's next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.